episode of the PFF College Football Show. I'm your host, Max Chadwick, alongside my co-host, Dalton Wasp. We got producer Eli back there in studio. Dalton, we are back to being the PFF College Football Show. We've done so many NFL draft episodes in the lead up to the 2024 NFL draft. Now that that's out of the way, we're back to talking about college football. Man, we got a banger of an episode to talk about today. Our top 10 quarterbacks in college football heading into the 2024 season. I don't know what your list looks like, Dalton. I know you don't really know what my list looks like either. So I'm kind of excited to kind of shock each other with our top 10s today, man.
Yeah, man, it feels good to kind of decompress after about probably 3 or 4 months of just straight draft prep for us and all that. You kind of came out of it for a minute for me where it was like, oh, wait, what do we do now? Now that this is actually done, like the biggest draft ever is done. But no, yeah, no, we just start rolling right into the season. We're going to get our top 10 lists going here. And if we got to start with quarterbacks. Where else can you start other than that? Man, they win and lose games. You already know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I just want to remind people, this is not 2025 NFL draft rankings. It's not that at all. This is just purely college football quarterbacks, the top 10 heading into next season. So my list I put out at pff.com, I actually changed it a little bit since that list came out a couple months ago, so it's not exactly the same, but you can check it out at pff.com, the list order, if you want as well. But Dalton, before we get into our top 10s, I want to start with our honorable mention. So who was the guy at number 11 that just missed out for you?
So I don't necessarily know maybe that he's a hard number 11, but he's definitely a guy that I think people need to be aware of, and I've talked about him before. It's Byron Brown from USF, and I know it's a name you don't want to hear after what he did to Syracuse in the bowl game. But no, this guy, if you get past his first three games, two of them were at Western Kentucky, where it was a struggle, at least in the passing game. And they were just getting rolling into a new offense. And again, USF in 2022 was the worst team in the country. So this is the foundation he was working with. And then there was a game against Alabama where their defense kept him in it and Brown struggled. But that's also Alabama, their top three defense in the country last year. From week four onward, this guy was a top 20 quarterback. He was third in the nation in passing grade under 20-yard passes. He was fourth in the country in play action grade. He was 17th, tied with Brady Cook in clean pocket grade at a 90.3. 19 total big time throws, was top 12. Look, he's got all the talent in the world. He's a 19-year-old kid who was the only player officially in the country this past year other than Jaden Daniels with 3,000 passing yards and 700 rush yards. He is the perfect dual threat quarterback for that offense. Alex Golish runs the same offense as Josh Heupel, the fast-paced Tennessee kind of thing. USF ran the most plays in the country last year, most plays per game. They get up and down the field, and Byron Brown's the centerpiece of it all. Ninth most yards after contact by a quarterback, 723 yards after contact rushing. Ninth most in PFF history. Ooh. So in a single season. So I'm telling you, you're talking about this kid is 6'3", he's 220, he's got a really good arm, and if they surround him with enough talent, USF has the quarterback to have make like a dark horse run at the group of five playoff spot.
I think they absolutely can, and I love Golish there too, calling plays for him. And yeah, you mentioned all those yards after contact. I'm pretty sure like half of them came against Syracuse in that bowl game, because that was a disastrous game by the Orange in that bowl game. But my honorable mention is also a group of five quarterback. Actually, was a group of five quarterback. Excuse me. They're now a power five school. Is Preston Stone from SMU. We actually talked to Rhett Lashley, their head coach of SMU, a month ago, I think. And I talked to him about Preston Stone, and he mentioned, that, yeah, he broke his left fibula, but he's now cleared. So he actually kind of broke the news on the show. He's like, no, he actually just today was cleared. So he's fortunately back to being there at SMU. I think he's one of the most underrated quarterbacks in college football. He had a 91 PFF passing grade this past year, only behind Jaden Daniels and Bo Nix among FBS quarterbacks. Both those guys were Heisman finalists. Daniels actually won the trophy, and then both those guys were top 12 picks in the NFL draft. Preston Stone really attacks downfield a lot. He had a 13.6 yard average at the target, second highest in the country this past year, 30 big time throws, fourth most in college football. Obviously, there's a little bit of a question of how he's going to handle going from the American Athletic Conference to the ACC, but just based off what we saw in his first year as a starter at SMU, I mean, he really was a really, really good quarterback. So I kind of hated leaving out of my top 10, man, because of how much I loved his tape from this past year. But yeah, he's a very close number 11 for me. All right, so let's get into our top 10 quarterbacks now in college football. Let's kick us off, Dalton, with your number 10 signal caller in the country heading into 2024.
So I'll be honest, the actual 10 and 11 spots came at the end of it, came down to two guys for me. I think it was either Drew Aller or was the guy that I actually went with, and that's Missouri's Brady Cook. Big time improvement. Their numbers, a lot of the grading and the profiles are a lot similar. Aller with a few less turnover worthy plays, Cook with a few more big time throws. I think the separator for me moving forward, if we're looking at this as a 2024 list, is actually the supporting cast. And Missouri last year had the 8th best receiving core in the country, and Penn State's was right around 90th. So if I was using that as a tiebreaker, kind of 2024 production, kind of incoming thing, Brady Cook got the 10th spot for me. I think actually the 10th spot, when I got down to it, was the hardest spot to pick, because it was at least 5 or 6 guys I thought about, and it came down to Cook and Aller, and I went here. Now, look, he got a lot better. 2.3% turnover-worthy play rate was a lot better than he had in 22, tied with several other guys that we're going to have in the top 10 here for 13th in the country. He's the only SEC quarterback last year to have 4 big-time throws in 3 different games. And you're talking about with Jaden Daniels and Carson Beck and Jalen Milroe. He's one of only 2 Power 5 quarterbacks last year, along with Michael Penix, who had 4 big-time throws in 0 turnover-worthy plays in multiple games. So there are moments with Brady Cook. You saw a massive improvement. We talked about Missouri and Kirby Moore and their offense, and Brady Cook and Luther Burden more than almost any other team last year. The improvement he showed, the receiving core, his top 5 receivers are coming back this year, including Luther Burden, who might be the best receiver in the country. And Missouri's got a very, very easy schedule compared to the rest of the SEC. There is a chance here. I think this passing game, now that Cody Schrader's gone, they lost a lot of pieces on defense. This passing game and the emergence of possibly, you know, we were talking the other day about Marquise Johnson. I think he might be the key to their season. But their receiving group as a whole, Burden, Johnson, Mookie Cooper, Theo Weiss, they get the starting tight end back as well. Brady Cook could be in line for a really, really big year after a huge improvement last year. I'm going with the Missouri Tiger at the 10th spot.
Dude, we have the same exact number 10, except I actually had Aller in my top 10. So I'm wondering who you're going to insert into your top 10 that I don't have. So I'm curious about that. But I have Brady Cook also at number 10. You mentioned the improvement, man. 80 passing grade this past year, 66.7. the year before. I actually, funny enough, I have some friends who went to Missouri and they host a podcast about Missouri, and they had me on a couple times. And preseason, one of their main talking points they wanted to talk to me about was, hey, is Brady Cook going to lose his job? Like, is there going to be someone else that takes his job away from Brady Cook? And then he had an unbelievable season, man. And like, listen, last year, in 2022, I should say, because now we're in 2024. In 2022, he had 17 big-time throws and 18 turnover-worthy plays. Whenever you have more turnover-worthy plays than big-time throws, that's bad. And you can understand why Missouri fans were saying, hey, we might need to get a new quarterback in here soon. This past year, 23 big-time throws and 10 turnover-worthy plays. He mentioned, man, he really upped the big-time throws and cut down on the turnover-worthy plays. And something he didn't bring up that I think is also a big part of his game, he's a great runner as well. He has basically 1,200 rushing yards over the last 2 years. That's 10th among Power 5 quarterbacks in that span. So I'm really a big fan of the improvement I saw from Brady Cook. I think this is really – hopefully this is who he is as a passer now. Hopefully he doesn't regress next year. But I don't think there's going to be much regression because, like you said, he brings back all of his receivers. You bring back Kirby Moore at offensive coordinator as well, who you and I both thought could be in line for a head coaching job. He comes back at OC. So I think it's a safe bet that he's going to have a similar successful senior year because of the supporting cast he's gotten and the improvement that we saw from Brady Cook already. So we had the same exact number 10. Let's see if we have the same exact number 9, Dalton. Who's your number 9 quarterback in college football right now?
My number 9 is the guy you had as your honorable mention, Preston Stone at SMU. One of the hottest quarterbacks, especially during the second half of last season. You mentioned he was 2nd in the FBS in average depth of target, throwing the ball downfield, multiple big-time throws in each of his final 9 games last season. They're really, when you got past, when they lost at TCU, I believe in week 3 or 4, once they got into play in the American, which is obviously the big question with stepping up into the ACC, but I think they can do it. This guy was unstoppable, man. Yeah. They were just, Rhett Lashley, Preston Stone, what they were putting together before he broke his leg in what I believe was a game against Navy that was 49-0 halfway through the second quarter. they did that twice. I believe there was twice where they put up 49 points in the first half, I think against Tulsa also. Preston Stone, his last 8 or 9 games, he was unstoppable, man. And I think the bigger thing for me. So you talk about, okay, then how do we get to this guy? How do we do it, right? Do we drop in coverage? Do we blitz him? Do we mix it up, right? An 89 passing grade when he wasn't blitzed and a 90 passing grade when he was. The only other two guys in the country with that combination of numbers were Jaden Daniels and Bo Nix. So you're talking about a guy who really just is not worried, in part because of the offense and just spectacular play calling, but he's not worried about what's going on in front of him. He's in clean pockets a lot, whether you have a blitz or not. He succeeds. He throws the ball downfield. And SMU, when they get rolling, especially when Stone was starting, I think Stone being hurt is actually, much like Jordan Travis with Florida State, is actually a big argument for why Liberty got taken over them for the New Year's Six. Because if you really look at the resumes, there's a big argument that it could have been SMU playing Oregon in that bowl game. I believe it was the Fiesta Bowl.
Yeah, Fiesta, yeah.
Where it's like SMU, Liberty had the easiest schedule in the country. SMU's two losses were to, I think it was Kansas. No, it was Oklahoma and TCU, two Big 12 teams on the road. So, no, I could see a road where Stone gets healthy, plays really, really well, and SMU competes in the ACC at the top of the ACC.
Dude, I think so too. And you know, there's a lot of people that I've seen some takes on Twitter saying, oh, well, look how much the four new Big 12 schools struggled in their first year in the Big 12. Like, oh, SMU's going to – I don't think so at all. I think SMU – I mean, I think I put them in my top 25 teams heading into next year, and they're probably like the third or fourth best ACC team. I think there's a real chance SMU is competing for that ACC title next year, and if so, competing for a playoff spot as well. I think SMU is going to have a really good year. They have a lot of really talented players, even outside of Preston Stone returning as well. All right, my number nine guy is Noah Fifita out of Arizona, who Mike Renner, formerly at PFF, now at CBS Sports, big congrats to Mike Renner, loves Noah Fifita for the NFL draft. I don't quite know if he's going to be much of a draft prospect considering how big he is. He's kind of like Bryce Young size. He's like 5'11", 195 pounds, and even that would be generous, honestly, that listed height and weight. But he's a tough, tough player, man. He had a 73.3 passing grade this past year under pressure, which was fifth among all quarterbacks in the country. Even though he's a smaller quarterback, he routinely hung in the pocket, took some big hits, and still delivered the ball downfield. One of the most clutch quarterbacks as well. He had a 90.9 passing grade on third or fourth down, which was third in America. Now, the issue is, even though he's smaller, you would think that he's a good runner. He really isn't. He only had 80 rushing yards this past year on about 2 yards per attempt, so not really anything as anything as a runner. And also, only at a 2.6% big-time throw rate, which is 132nd in the country. But like I said, he's a tough kid. He makes some really, really fun plays, can escape pressure pretty well, and like I said, he plays under pressure really, really well. I really like him a lot, and him and Tetaro McMillan, who was going to be either number one or number two on a receiver list when we do that. It's a really fun combination. And also, those guys have been playing together since middle school. They went to middle school together, then they went to high school together. Now they're at Arizona together. It's a really, really cool story that they have there. And now both of them, I mean, I have a feed as a top 10 quarterback in the country. McMillan's a top two at least receiver in the country. Both of them are really good players as well. So really cool story. But yeah, I like Noah Fifita a lot. I don't quite know if he's going to be much of a draft prospect considering his height and the fact that he's just not as good as Bryce Young was, which is why people overlooked the size with him. But I still really like Noah Fifita as a college quarterback, and I think he's going to be a really fun player to watch next year.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that, and I'll actually get to him in a little bit here. But moving to number eight for me is a guy that you kind of opened my eyes to. This is a team and a guy I didn't watch a whole lot during the season, weren't really in playoff contention. But how about Garrett Green from West Virginia for me at number eight? Kind of a what do we call him here? I'd call him a high variance player for sure. Not you know, the knocks against him are going to be completion percentage and sometimes completing the easy throws, but man, you talk about a home run hitter. I mean, you got the guy leading the FBS in big time throw rate at 10.2%, 13.5 yard average depth of target, highest in the Power Five. This guy does two things. He throws the ball down the field and he takes off running, and he's really good at both. He also led all quarterbacks with 13 rushing touchdowns. So Garrett Green from West Virginia. Now, I will say, because a lot of it is, he's not the biggest, or I don't even think the fastest guy. He's another one. He's probably about 6 foot and 200. And it almost looks weird to me when he takes off running, because I'm like, I don't feel like he's that imposing. Like, he's that fast. Like, he's a Jalen Milroe or an Anthony Richardson. He's certainly not the size of those guys. but it works, right? He makes it work. And then he does have a rifle, absolute rifle, deep ball. He's the guy, though, I got him at number eight because it's just between the downfield passing and the rushing, he's got to be on this list. He is the guy, though, a little bit that I worry about. Is he the one that's most likely to fall off of this list at the end of the year, if we were to do an end-of-year list, just because there's so much variance at times in that style of play, and it kind of reminded me almost like that huge year that Devin Leary had at North Carolina State. I need to see him complete more passes, take what the defense gives him more often, but the ability's all there. He's mobile. He's got a cannon for an arm. He's just in the right offense that allows him to throw downfield at West Virginia. Garrett Green's a guy to look for. Would it be that shocking if he ended the year as the best quarterback in the Big 12? No, it wouldn't be that shocking. It's just the high variance stuff. The highs are going to be really, really high. I just want to see now that everybody knows who he is, can he take what the defense gives him at times, be a little more conservative when he needs to be, and the big plays will still be there because he is one of the best just big play machines in the country right now.
Yeah, I think you described him really well. I'll actually get to him very soon because I have him also in my top 10. But I'm going to go with a guy that you actually had right outside your top 10 at number 8 here, and it's my guy, Drew Aller, out of Penn State. Now, I wrote about him in this and saying, listen, I know this is going to be controversial. It was. Once this list came out, there were a lot of people, even Penn State fans, who were like, he should not be a top 10 quarterback. Because of the box score, and you look at his box score, sub 60% completion rate, just, 2,600 passing yards, and you're like, all right, he's fine, but like, he's not a top 10 quarterback. What the box score won't tell you, and what our numbers at PFF will tell you, is that Penn State's supporting cast was horrible, horrible last year for Drew Aller. Last year, Penn State's receivers had the fifth highest drop rate in the Power 5 at about 11%, fifth highest drop rate. Also, even with Olu Fashanu, he was under pressure within 2.5 seconds on 21% of his dropbacks this past season. The only other quarterback who's going to be in my top 10 who had a higher rate of being under pressure within 2.5 seconds was Shedeur Sanders. And we all talk about how terrible Colorado's offensive line is. That's the one thing we always talk about Colorado is how bad that offensive line is. Well, Drew Allers was right behind him in terms of pressure within 2.5 seconds. And then also, Drew Aller, the big thing with him, and I think his main selling point, he's got an absolute rifle of an arm. Well, Penn State had the second lowest deep pass attempt rate in all of college football. All of college football. It was as if I was their quarterback out there, and they didn't trust me to throw it 20 yards downfield. That's basically what they were doing to Drew Aller. He had a 10% of his dropbacks ended up being a deep pass attempt, which is, like I said, the second lowest in the country. And then, obviously, his offensive coordinator, Mike Yurcich, was fired in November. That's how the play calling was bad, the receivers were terrible, and also the offensive line was not giving him as much help as he deserved. Despite all that working against him, he still had an 86.3 PFF grade, which is a top 20 mark among all quarterbacks in the country, 1.1% turnover-worthy play rate, only behind Bo Nix in the FBS. Only Bo Nix had a lower turnover-worthy play rate than Drew Aller this past year. I'm excited. So the only reason why I'm a little more optimistic this year is because of the new offensive coordinator, Andy Kulnicki, which I know you've talked about extensively, Dalton. At Kansas this past year, Kansas' offense was third in average depth of target at about 12.3 yards. So hopefully that means Drew Aller would take more shots downfield. And also, Kansas was tied for second in the country in receiving grade. And other schools like Oregon and Washington were up there as well. And Kansas obviously doesn't have many superstar receivers. So hopefully that should help out Penn State's receiving core this year because they just lost their top receiver in Keandre Lambert-Smith. And they really didn't bring much to replace him. They got Julian Fleming from Ohio State, but he hasn't done much in 4 years. So I'm still worried about the supporting cast. I'm still very worried because I think the receiving core is still lacking. And obviously you lose three starting offensive linemen to the NFL draft as well. So the supporting cast still really worries me. I am excited about Andy Kulnicki as a new offensive coordinator. Hopefully he can unlock Drew Aller a little bit more. But I'm still a little pessimistic about Drew Aller next year even because, again, he's so talented. He deserves to be on this top 10, in my opinion. But it's just the Penn State supporting cast really does scare me and might not let him fully showcase what he's capable of, honestly.
Yeah, no, and I will say this. Kulnicki is the reason for optimism because the way they ran their offense at Kansas, I think when I was watching it, the best way to describe it is he knows how to get a roster to punch above its weight class.
Yes.
Essentially. So Kansas, we know Kansas may not have had, maybe other than Devin Neal, a single NFL caliber player on their offense, and yet they use the entire width of the field. It's a diverse running game. It's a downfield passing game. It uses the entire area of the field to make big plays, right? And as long as they have some sort of playmakers with a little bit of speed on the outside that can stretch the width of it, Aller's going to stand a chance. But it's going to take some time. It's a very complicated offense. They use motion more than any team in the country last year, Kansas did. So you're going to see a lot more wrinkles to Penn State's offense than you've seen in the past. So I think it's the supporting cast is definitely the reason for pessimism. Coach Kotelnicki is the reason for optimism. We'll see where that balances out during the season and if that style of football can work in the Big Ten instead of the Big 12. But I'm going to roll back to the Big 12 real quick here. Your number nine guy, Noah Fifita, is my number seven guy. And look, the big-time throw rate is low, but I think that's more. You have to remember, Jaden Delora got hurt. Fifita was not supposed to start last year, right? He came in, he started, I believe it was the fourth game was his first start. His first two starts were even, I believe, against USC and against Washington. And that's a tough task to try to come in there and just step in and play. Oh, here's Caleb Williams and Michael Penix, try to out-duel him. And he almost out-dueled Williams. I believe that game went to double or even triple overtime, and they lost by 1 point. So early on, Jed Fish kind of had it. It was conservative. It was high percentage. It was running the ball. It was asking Fifita to just run the offense. And the big reason for me that Fifita gets a higher ranking here for me than you is the last four games, especially a newfound willingness to throw the ball down the field. Okay. So through week 10, his passing grade on 10-plus yard throws was a 75.1, which is every bit of decent, right? Mm-hmm. His last four games, including that bowl game against Oklahoma, 10-plus yard throws, passing grade 93.3, which I believe was a top five. I want to say a top five mark. I don't remember the exact ranking, but a 93.3 on 10-plus yard throws in his last four games. He figured out, look, I can throw the ball downfield. I've got receivers. Last year he had Cowing. He had McMillan. He still has McMillan this year, who is the third best receiver in the country on 10-plus yard throws behind Xavier Leggett and Malik Nabers, two first-round picks. Mm-hmm. So I've got a downfield weapon, an elite downfield weapon at that. I know he's like, I know I'm a good decision maker. I'm not going to turn the ball over anyway. I really like watching him. I like Fifita's eyes the most when I watch him. You mentioned he's not that mobile. He's not going to take off that often. So his eyes move kind of in a similar way to Bryce Young, where it's like looking to throw, getting to my second, third, and fourth option, checking down when I can. Last year he had Coleman and Wiley. We'll see what he has at running back this year. But I just think the combination of if Fifita is going to keep this downfield attack like he did late in the year with McMillan as good as we think he is, those two guys, that might be the best quarterback receiver combo in the country. It's entirely possible. But Fifita, for me, he showed me something different in his last four games attacking downfield. If they keep that vertical element, he's going to be really, really dangerous.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I love Fifita, man. He's a really fun college quarterback. It's gonna be, again, the interesting debate is going to be the NFL projections because of how small he is. But as a college quarterback, I think he very much deserves to be in the top 10 of this list. All right, my number seven guy is a guy that you already talked about as well, Garrett Green from West Virginia. He mentioned the highest big-time throw rate in the country, tied for first, like you said, with 13 rushing touchdowns in the country as well for quarterbacks. Also was sixth among Power 5 quarterbacks with 773 rushing yards. Also, another stat that I think is really really cool, and it's actually an important stat for quarterbacks, is pressure to sack conversion rate. So how often you're pressured and how often that results in sacks. He actually had the lowest pressure to sack conversion rate in the country at 4.8%. So really good job by Garrett Green of not taking sacks either. And he also had a 91 overall grade, which is eighth in America as well. You mentioned the high average of a target, 13.5 yards downfield, highest in the Power 5. Really, he's a big game hunter, man. That's a big way to describe it. He's going to go for the big play almost every single time. And those big swings can lead to home runs, but they also can lead to strikeouts, which is why I think some people are a little bit lower on Garrett Green because his completion percentage is not that good. And his adjusted completion percentage is not that good either. He had a 63% adjusted completion rate, which is the third worst in the Power 5 this past season. But again, it's important to contextualize that. It's not like he's inaccurate. It's just he's taking deep shots downfield. And obviously, the deeper you throw the ball, the less likely it is you're going to complete it. So that's really why Garrett Green's completion rate is that low. But he is a really, really fun quarterback to watch, man. It's just I don't know how translatable it is to the next level, but, man, he is going for the big play every single time, which is a fun watch. And honestly, he gets it enough where it's still worth putting in the top 10 because he does make some huge plays for West Virginia. But like you said, high variance is definitely the way to describe Garrett Green. But I like him a lot, man. I think he's a really, really fun college quarterback. And honestly, I think he's probably the most underrated quarterback in college football right now. I've seen a lot of these lists, and he's like nowhere to be found on any of them. I would argue Garrett Green might be the most underrated quarterback in the country right now. So he's my number 7. Who is number 6, Dalton, that you have?
A very similar player to Garrett Green. I'm going to Tuscaloosa with Jalen Milroe.
Wow.
Same thing. Big, big-time arm, big plays, running like crazy. Like, Jalen Milroe has the entire skill set that you see nowadays that can win a Heisman Trophy. Second in the country behind Green in big-time throw rate. 521 scramble yards. That's the second most behind Jaden Daniels last year. 26 big-time throws on deep balls with zero turnover-worthy plays. The most deep big-time throws without a turnover-worthy play in the country. And the part where he still has to be on this list, I think these first six especially are going to, and I believe we have in some order maybe the same six, are the guys that have to be up. Like, Milroe has to be in a top 10 here just because of all the talent and the fit in Kalen DeBoer's offense, right? Washington over the last 2 years led the Power 5 in deep passing attempts. The only thing Milroe has to do, now that the book kind of got out on him in the playoff game against Michigan, have to handle the blitz better, have to get rid of the ball quicker.
Yes.
Okay, because we're just, there's too many. I don't know if he led the nation in time to throw, but he was at least in the top 5. It was like, you're talking about 3.5 seconds close to it on his time to throw.
It led the nation.
He does have to, he definitely has to get, he led the nation.
Yeah, 3.45 seconds. That led the FBS.
Definitely can't, we can't lead the nation in time to throw again. It just can't happen. And DeBoer, look, he did it with Michael Penix. He got the ball well downfield without it taking too long, right? You're talking, if you can get him even into that 2.8, 2.9 range, and some of that's tilting with the scrambling and the improv, because there were times last year when Alabama's offense just looked like, hey, Jalen, just figure it out, because they just weren't as talented as they'd been in past years when they had Smith and Waddle and all those guys. But Milroe has to be on this list. It's just, you know, 10 yards per attempt, the second best among players with at least 200 attempts behind Jaden Daniels. He's got all the talent, the physical ability to win a Heisman Trophy. It's just, it's a new coaching staff. They lost Isaiah Bond. They lost Amari Nyeblack. They're losing weapons, right? They're going through, it's a big period of transition at Alabama right now. But on talent alone, Milroe has to be on this list. It's the kind of ambiguity of what it's going to look like under Kalen DeBoer that has me with Milroe outside of the top 5 here.
Yeah, the loss of Isaiah Bond was huge because he's a guy that was an excellent deep threat. And, yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, they got Jeremy Bernard transferred in from Washington. And I think, you know, obviously with Roma Dunze and Jalen McMillan, Jalen Polk there, Bernard really wasn't able to shine too much at Washington, but I think he could do well next year for them. But, yeah, that receiving corps is a little bit of a question right now for Alabama, because I think Isaiah Bond would have been huge to bring back from Milroe, and they would have utilized him a lot. But now he's at Texas with Quinn Ewers, who we'll talk about in a little bit. But my numbers, I'm actually surprised he was 6 for you. I had him pretty higher than this. My number 6 is Jackson Dart, staying in the SEC from Ole Miss. Dart made a big, big leap, man. He had a 75.2 passing grade in 2022, 88.7 this past year, so basically a 13-point jump. And really, the big reason for that was he got so much better outside of the pocket. In 2022, he had a 42.8 passing grade outside of the pocket, which was 111th in the country. This past year, went from a 42.8 to a 74.6, which was 15th in the country. And overall, his overall PFF grade was 6th among all quarterbacks in America at a 91.2. Now, the reason why he's number 6, and he's higher on a lot of other people's lists, Lane Kiffin's offense is one of the most quarterback-friendly in college football. He makes it very easy on the quarterback with RPOs, play actions, just overall making it pretty easy on his signal callers. And if you take away RPOs and take away play action, Jackson Dart had 6 big-time throws and 6 turnover-worthy plays. So I think the projection to the NFL for Jackson Dart is going to be really interesting, because, yes, he puts up big numbers, and, yes, it looks great, but it also is like, okay, but how much of it is translatable with Lane Kiffin's offense? But as a college quarterback, definitely deserves to be in the top 6. I just think You gotta factor in the Lane Kiffin offense a little bit as well. But I think overall, Dart's a really, really good college quarterback. And Ole Miss is going to be competing for a college football playoff berth next year. And a big, big reason for that is Jackson Dart. And if you want a dark horse Heisman, I think Jackson Dart's a really good bet. Because I think they're going to throw the ball a ton next year with Quinshon Judkins leaving. They got some really, really fun weapons at Ole Miss between Trey Harris. Juice Wells is there now. Caden Priest scored a tight end. I think Jackson Dart's going to have a big year next year. I think Ole Miss is going to have also a big year as well, making the college football playoffs. So if you want a dark horse Heisman bet, I think Jackson Dart's a really good one. But again, with the Lane Kiffin offense kind of muddying it a little bit, that's why he's number six for me and not in my top five.
Well, honestly, for every single reason you just said and probably a few more, that's why I have Jackson Dart at number five. Okay. They are primed with him in his second year there to make a playoff run and maybe even, you know, play your cards right, maybe even win the SEC. Ole Miss, they got that much talent in the transfer portal. They had to fix up their defense. Dart, I think it's just going to be the big game question. Last year, you look at the two games you struggled, Georgia, Alabama. Yeah. That's just the ability, you're right, the ability to drop back and throw the football. Now, one thing that does make Lane Kiffin's offense unique is the efficiency throwing the ball outside of the numbers. We know the trendy thing in the last few years is throwing the ball over the middle, intermediate parts, crossing routes, things like that. Lane Kiffin in the passing game uses the entire width of the field. So let's take this outside the NFL numbers, take the college numbers, move them in 5 yards, and that's what we're talking about here. Outside of NFL numbers, Jackson Dart had a 92.4 passing grade on those throws last year, second in the nation behind Bo Nix. So he understands, especially in the play-action game, how to use this offense, his place in this offense. And now, you know, we got weapons like Trey Harris and Caden Prescorn that are really, really good. Look, 6th in intermediate grade, 5th in play action grade, 2% turnover worthy play right. There's not a whole lot that Jackson Dart does wrong. I just need him to show up in the biggest moments. There comes a moment for every quarterback when everyone, I say it all the time, everyone and their mother in the stadium knows you're throwing the football. Can you do it in that situation? So, as far as running the offense, and if they get the running game going and Kiffin gets, you know, I still think he's arguably the best play caller in the country. If Kiffin gets the sequencing going and their defense holds up, Dart's going to be really, really good. That's the part that gives me confidence. We could talk about the NFL prospects later.
Yeah.
In this offense with these players and with Jackson Dart in another year of it, I could see Ole Miss finishing the regular season as a top five team with Dart at the helm. And I think that's hard to ignore. Everything about his profile, except those really obvious passing situations. Like there's going to come a time, right? It's going to come a time where they're playing. I forget who's all on their schedule. They're playing at Georgia or they're playing at Bama, where it's like, okay, this is the drive. Every quarterback has that one drive that's going to define their season. That'll be the moment we judge Jackson Dart. But on 95% of the profile, he looks good to me, honestly, especially with Kiffin as his coach. We're both big believers in Ole Miss this year, so I'll take Dart at number five. Ahead of Milroe, I think there is less variance with Dart's game right now.
I think that's fair, and you look at the schedule right now. They play Oklahoma on October 26th. They play Georgia on November 9th. LSU on October 12th. Those are some big games for Jackson Dart, I think. So it's going to be interesting how he does next year. I am shocked, Dalton, that I am lower on this guy than you, considering how much shit you gave me when I tried to put him in the first round of our mock draft, and you were like, absolutely not. And we thank
and
you.
I still stand by that, by the way. I still stand by that.
I cannot fucking believe I have Quinn Ewers lower on my list than you. This is crazy. I thought you were going to put Quinn Ewers at like 8 or something like that because you're down against him. You're higher on him than me. He's on your list, right? Before I...
He's on the list. I didn't leave him off in favor of something.
Okay.
Something wild.
Yeah, wow.
No, he's on there.
All right. Quinn Ewers is my number 5. I cannot believe I'm the low man on Quinn Ewers on this show, considering how of a screaming match we were getting at PFF, because I wanted him in the top 32 of our mock draft, and you're like, absolutely not. But all right, here we go. Yeah, listen, Texas was finally back this past year because of Quinn Ewers. A big reason for that. He cut the mullet, and he cut the gunslinger mentality that kind of hindered him in 2022. His turnover-worthy play rate in 2022 was 3.6%. He cut it basically in half, or more than half, to 1.7% this past year. His passing grade went from a 70.9 to an 85.6. So really big time improvement for Quinn Ewers as a redshirt sophomore. However, why his NFL projection a little bit is a little bit, we're lower at least than most people, because I see a lot of number one overall talk for him. He led the Power Five in play action dropbacks. He had 240 play action dropbacks this past year. And when you take those out, he wasn't nearly as efficient without play action. He had a 72.2 passing grade, or PFF grade, excuse me, on non-play action dropbacks, which was 83rd in the country. Also, he's going to have to shoulder a lot more of the offensive weight without Xavier Worthy, Adonai Mitchell, Jordan Whittington, Jonathan Brooks, Jatavion Sanders. They lost a lot on offense. Yeah, they brought in some talented receivers, namely Isaiah Bond, who could be a first-round pick. The more I watch, I watched a lot of wide receiver tape yesterday. I think Isaiah Bond, we might have messed it up by not putting him in the first round. I think that guy's going to be a first-round pick next year. But he's going to be the top weapon. They got Matthew Golden there as well. Silas Bolden transferred in as well from Oregon State. So they have a brand-new receiving core, and Amari Nyblak from Alabama is a really talented tight end as well. So they have new weapons there, but I just don't think it'll be as good as what they had this past year. But if he can keep improving and if he can carry the offense more, I think the Longhorns are serious national championship contenders, and I could be more on board with Quinn Ewers being one of the top quarterbacks in the draft. It's just it's still a little more wait and see with Quinn Ewers right now. So he's my number five quarterback. I cannot believe that you are higher on Quinn Ewers than me in this quarterback list, though.
Yeah, and we'll just keep the conversation going because I do have him at number four, and it's He's to me closer to Dart at number five on this list than he is to the top three. I think there's a pretty clear gap between the top three and the rest of the list. Look, it's just the more numbers I look at, and it's like 13th in the country in passing grade, 6th in the country in turnover worthy play rate, 8th in the country in play action grade in a heavy play action offense. More than half of his dropbacks are play action. He's a master of the RPO. I'll admit that part. Look, the last 2 years, when there's an RPO on, he's got an 82.9 passing grade, which is actually second in the country, right? He runs the same way that Dart runs Kiffin's offense to just that level of excellence. Ewers does the same thing with Sarkisian. The harder part with Ewers and why he can't be higher on this list than this is four is probably the absolute highest. It's that thing of like, especially with college quarterbacks, and you know how things are year to year with college players. There can be a lot of variance. They're young kids. I think we pretty much know what we're getting out of Quinn Ewers. If nothing else, you're getting what you got out of him last year. The question is, do we know too much about what we're getting out of Quinn Ewers? He's got only two career games with 90-plus grades, but they were both against Alabama. So it's so hard to tell.
No sense.
It's a consistency thing. It's a ceiling thing. Like, can he – same? I think it's a much closer to Dart than it is to the next three guys on the list, because – can he, in those big moments when everyone knows we're dropping back, can he do that? He also does less. I mean, I was thinking about really the debate for me was it Ewers or Dart at four and five? Which is it? I kind of settled in on Milroe at six, and I kind of coin flipped it between these two. But you've got two very similar situations, right? The difference for me, Ewers has shown us the high end a little bit more than Dart in dropback situations, even though he's definitely less mobile than Jackson Dart. There is not a ton of improv with Quinn Ewers, and I think that's going to come into play with his draft stock too. But when you look at the running game he has, the weapons, he's got to gel with the weapons coming in with, like you mentioned, Isaiah Bond and Amari Nyblak. And I really like Silas Bolden from Oregon State, man. I'm telling you right now, that's going to be a playmaker. He may even come in and be better than Jordan Whittington has been for them the last few years. It's just a very, to me, the more I thought about it, more so than a high-end Heisman contending sort of thing. And I don't know that Ewers is good enough to win a national title. I really don't. It's a safe projection, especially with Sarkisian and the way they run their offense. The things he's good at in that offense, he's really, really good at. I have to admit that. I don't know that it translates to the NFL. I really don't. Right now, I wouldn't have him as a first-round guy. But if you're projecting Texas and their offense and their run game and these weapons and the way Ewers just knows how to run it. Now, like you've said it before, week two, he could go into the big house in Ann Arbor and struggle, and we start hearing about Arch Manning, especially the way he looked in the spring game. There's going to be a question sometime this year of, is Quinn Ewers good enough to win a title? But by the numbers, it's a safe projection. and I was between him and Dart 4 and 5, and I went with Ewers just knowing we've seen the high end in big spots, especially those two Bama games, a little bit more.
Yeah, and I think him over Dart makes sense too, because Dart, I mean, had a 58 passing grade this past year against Alabama, and the year before was a 65.1. So Ewers, I mean, like I said, was 90-plus both years. So it almost doesn't make sense sometimes when you see some of these games where he's just like the Wyoming game. He was terrible in the Wyoming game. He almost lost that game. But then he, like, that was a week after Alabama. So it was like he had a 90.6 passing grade against Alabama, then a 50.2 against Wyoming the very next week. So it's just like the inconsistency is maddening sometimes with Quinn Ewers, because you see him against the best secondary in college football just tearing him up, and then Wyoming, he just all of a sudden shits the bed. So, yeah, Quinn Ewers is maddening sometimes, man, but the arm talent is there. I like him a lot. I think he could be a first-round pick next year, but he was my number five quarterback. My number four was a guy that you actually had, I believe, at number six, which was Jalen Milroe from Alabama. So I really like Milroe. He's just a big play waiting to happen, man. He really is just like a better version, I think, of Garrett Green in a lot of ways, where was second in the country in big-time throw rate, only behind Garrett Green, 9.2%. 35 runs of 10-plus yards, which were fourth among FBS quarterbacks. 96.9 passing grade on deep throws, only behind Jaden Daniels, who won the Heisman Trophy among FBS quarterbacks. And also, another thing I love about Jalen Milroe, his mental toughness, man. Week three, he got benched after Alabama's loss to Texas, so he missed that USF game. From week four on, he had an 88 grade, which was tied for eighth in the country among all quarterbacks. So, you know, a lot of quarterbacks in that situation, when they get benched, their confidence is shattered. And if they get put back in, they don't look nearly as good. Milroe came back with a vengeance, man, which I loved. And he was a great teammate during that USF game as well. Like, he really was trying to help out the quarterbacks as much as possible. He wasn't sulking on the sideline or anything like that. So love the character, love the mental toughness from Jalen Milroe. However, like you said, his play style is still boom or bust in a lot of ways. There was a lot more boom than bust this past year, but it is still a lot to work on. For starters, like you said, internal clock is a mess right now. Michigan really had the book on him, which is blitz him. He's not going to know what the hell to do. And that's why, really, they won that game. He had as we mentioned before, Garrett Green. The one thing that's the difference between Garrett Green and Jalen Milroe, Green does a great job of not converting pressure to sacks. Milroe does not. He had a 32.4% pressure to sack conversion rate, which was sixth highest in the country. So about a third of the time that he got pressured, he was getting sacked, which is a very, very high rate. Like I said before, 3.45 second average time to throw, longest in the country. Also, from 0 to 19 yards, so he's a great deep ball thrower, like I mentioned before, the second best deep passing grade in the country. But from 0 to 19 yards, a short and intermediate, he had a 68 passing grade, which was 100th in the country. I'm still excited to see what Kalen DeBoer can do with him, because obviously he helped transform Michael Penix Jr. into a top 10 pick in the NFL draft, when not a lot of people expected that from him. So I'm excited to see if he can do the same thing with Milroe, who probably has maybe a higher ceiling than Michael Penix Jr. with all the tools he's got. If you can do the same with him, I think he could win a Heisman Trophy. He could be a top NFL draft pick with all those tools. You just want to see the internal clock improve. You want to see him get rid of the football quicker, and you want to see him improve from the short and intermediate game. But other than that, man, he is a big play waiting to happen with his elite rushing ability and his big arm. I really like Jalen Milroe a lot, and I think he's a really good Heisman contender because of Kalen DeBoer. Obviously, the receiving core is a question mark, but he's got the best O-line in the country protecting him as well. It's going to be interesting next year, but I think Jalen Milroe has a very, very high ceiling, and number four can honestly look pretty laughable once he's holding up the stiff arm trophy next year.
Yeah, no, he's got all the talent in the world, and the same things that make him great and being the best athlete on the field definitely are the things that can be the kryptonite at times. So it'll be really interesting to see how that entire Alabama team rolls without Nick Saban. It's going to be one of the biggest storylines, especially early in the year, and we'll see if DeBoer can get Milroe to adjust. Number three here. All right, we are going to spend the next year psychoanalyzing this guy, right? Let's go to Boulder real quick to a team that, yes, only won four games last year, but has on the field a spectacular quarterback, and that's Shedeur Sanders. Look, there's no denying what he did last year, right? Just coming into Colorado, changing the culture, even though they only won four games. Look, Colorado the year before, they were the worst team in the Power Five by far. it wasn't even close. And Deion and Shadur went in there and they at least changed the culture and they set some sort of expectation. Now, whatever else comes with that is not part of these rankings. We'll see where that goes the rest of the season. Shadur Sanders, though, ninth in the country in passing grade, eighth in adjusted completion percentage, tied with Jaden Daniels for fourth in turnover-worthy play rate. In a clean pocket, when he is protected, and he was under pressure 37% of the time last year, which is way too high, there's just no denying that Shadur is really, really good. The football IQ is there. 92.9 clean passing grade. The only two guys that were better, Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels. Yep. It's just two picks. It's hard to sit here and say this guy's not really good. He's one of only two quarterbacks, along with Drew Aller, who had at least 100 clean dropbacks and no interceptions. I believe he only threw three or four interceptions the entire season. He doesn't beat himself. Yes, he took too many sacks, but to me, that's in part trying not to beat himself, right? Like, I would rather – Sanders comes from the school of I would rather take the sack than throw the ball into danger, which I'm not going to blame him much for. If they got any – if they got any improvement along their offensive line, five-star prospect Jordan Seaton,
yep,
and the transfers that they brought in, if they got any better on their offensive line and any semblance of a running game going, because I believe they were close to last, if not last in the country in rushing yards per game. They couldn't run the ball for anything last year either. They've got a boatload of weapons, man. They've got Jimmy Horn. They've got Travis Hunter. They have LaJonte Wester. They have Will Shepard. They've got a boatload of weapons to work with. There is no reason to think that Shadur, with another year under his belt, isn't a top five or even a top three quarterback. And if Colorado's defense and their run game and their pass protection, I know it's a lot of things, if those three things are any better, he could be in the Heisman race easily. Because everyone's going to focus on the off-field stuff and the hype and all this stuff, but there really isn't any question. There is no way Shadur Sanders could be outside of the top five on this list right now. I don't even think it's possible.
No,
he's just it's so clean. When he is protected, he's so good. The football IQ is there. He's got the weapons. He could have an absolutely massive year if Colorado got any better on the offensive line.
You're right. And there are obviously some stuff, you know, on Twitter. These guys log off Twitter or somewhere. And you know, sometimes a lot of the Colorado stuff is just like, makes you want to dislike him, and then you watch Shadur Sanders, you're going in like, all right, hopefully, like, I don't like him that much, and it's like, dude, he's so good. Like, it's tough, man. It's tough because he's incredible. A really, really talented quarterback, and I think you mentioned it really well. He's an advanced processor, man. The way he sees the field is so good. He had, like I said, the third best clean pocket passing grade, and the only two above him were the first two picks of the draft in Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels. So, really, really great quarterback. And yeah, he's just put it this way, he's my number three, like you. I think we have the same exact top three in the same order, I think, as well. 89.2 passing grade, seventh among all FBS quarterbacks. Again, he made the jump from the FCS to the Power 5 level, and he made it look pretty easy, honestly. 1.6% turnover worthy play rate, fourth among all quarterbacks in the country. Wasn't like he was ultra conservative either. So, Drew Aller, low turnover worthy play rate, but like I said before, he wasn't really taking shots downfield. Sanders still had 23 big-time throws, which were top 20 in the country as well. Now, he took the most sacks in the Power 5. He had 49 sacks this past year. A lot of that could be because of how many dropbacks he took, also because of how bad the offensive line was, but he had the 17th highest average time to throw in the Power 5 at about 2.9 seconds. So still a high average time to throw, but within a clean pocket, there is nobody better than Shadur Sanders. It's going to be interesting because I think Colorado's offensive line, you look at their projected depth chart right now, the entire offensive line are new players. There's not a single guy from last year that's projected to start on the offensive line right now. One of them being Jordan Seaton, who is the number one offensive tackle coming out of high school, projected to be the starting left tackle this year. So we'll see if he can live up to the hype immediately as a true freshman left tackle. Otherwise, everyone else is going to be a transfer coming in an offensive line. So maybe these transfers can gel immediately. It's going to be interesting to see what they can do, though. But if they can get him more time to throw, he's got, like I said, he's got great weapons to work with at Colorado. He could have a big year. It's really just whether or not Colorado has enough on the offensive line to protect him. But separating him from the offensive line, he is a very, very good quarterback and has a very good argument to be QB1 in next year's draft. All right, number two, Dalton. Who is number two?
Number two, we're going to Oregon. We're getting a transfer from Oklahoma, and that's Dylan Gabriel coming in there. Now, this does not mean I think Dylan Gabriel is a better NFL prospect than Sanders or Ewers, but it's hard to deny the statistical profile, and I think we both believe that this is the single best player team fit that happened in the transfer portal, right? It's just too clean. It's too clean of like, okay, we go from Bo Nix and we're still ready to contend with, we have Tez Johnson and Evan Stewart and Jordan James and all these weapons, and we'll just go get a solid veteran that knows how to run an offense like this, right? And Dylan Gabriel, look, during his time at UCF, during his time at Oklahoma, debate what you want about his NFL prospects, but he's really, really good. It's hard to deny that. Third best overall grade in the country last year. Ninth in the country in clean passing grade and pressured passing grade. 400-plus rushing yards in each of the last 2 years. And you've got an Oregon team that's play-action heavy, and they were in the top two in pass pro grade and rushing grade and receiving grade. Yeah. And the only guys that are really losing off that offense, Bucky Irving, but Jordan James might be a better natural runner than Bucky. Troy Franklin, but they're getting Evan Stewart in, and then you're losing Jackson Powers Johnson, but the rest of their line behind is really, really good. Yeah. So Oregon's got everything set up to be a top five offense again, and Gabriel going in there, he's just the right guy for them to have. Heavy play action. He ran last year 52.5% of his dropbacks were play action. That's the highest percentage in the Power Five. So it's going to be an offense he's familiar with. I think it's the same questions that Ewers and Jackson Dart have of, can you drop back and throw it when we really need you to? When we're playing Ohio State and we're down 4 points and there's a minute and a half to go, can you get us that drive? But I don't think either one of us see any reason that Dylan Gabriel couldn't be A, in the Heisman race, and B, have Oregon potentially as a top four team getting one of those buys going into the playoff. I mean, the Ohio State game is going to be the biggest game of the year, and then obviously a Big Ten title game possibly against whoever. But Oregon, they're about the cleanest projection maybe out of any team in the league right now as a top 10 team, and it's in part because they got Dylan Gabriel to replace Bo Nix.
So would he be your Heisman pick right now?
Ooh, that's a hard one. Man.
I think he might be for me.
It's a real – I think he has to be in the top at least three or four because you've just – it's such a clean transition to that offense, man. Like, I don't think of any, like, transfer quarterbacks – I don't know if there's any others. Do we have any other transfers on this list?
No, not on this list, no.
Of honestly, of any maybe player in the country, I don't think there's it's going to be such a smooth transition, right? He's a veteran. Is it his sixth year in college football?
Sixth year, yeah.
It's his sixth year in college football. He's already played on two different teams. He's already excelled with two different teams in offenses that aren't – Josh Heupel's offense is a little bit different, a little more that Tennessee thing that they have going on there. But Oklahoma's offense really shouldn't be that – it's not that different from Oregon's. They run at a fast pace. They do want to run the ball. They have RPO and play action and all that stuff. I just don't think – I think the bigger thing for me is Gabriel's – he really shouldn't have any issue adjusting. And even if you do, make the same reads you've always made. And you know, I think we've been having this argument this week of right now you have to project Tez Johnson and Evan Stewart as maybe the best pair of receivers together in the country.
Yeah.
I mean, what more could you ask for if you're going to transfer to a school than what they have going in Oregon right now? I have bigger questions about their defense than their offense.
Yeah, so producer Eli just sent us the list on of the Heisman odds right now. So Beck and Quinn Ewers are tied for first at plus 900, and then Dylan Gabriel is third at plus 1,000. So, yeah.
I think it's reasonable. I think to have him third is perfectly, perfectly reasonable. Beck and Ewers, we already know they're going to be in the playoff race too, but I don't see – any issue with that. Gabriel's going to put up – again, we can debate his NFL stuff in the spring later on. Yeah. He's, what, 5'11", 6', about a 200 pounds, not a huge arm. It's everything about his traits are kind of just solid. But he's going to put up huge numbers in this offense.
I think – I haven't locked it in yet, but I think he's going to be a Heisman pick. I really do because I think Oregon's going to be one of the top teams in college football next year. I think they're going to be – right now I put them probably third behind Ohio State and Georgia in terms of the best teams in the country. And I think Dylan Gabriel is going to put up numbers in that offense, man. I think a lot like Bo Nix is going to be a top Heisman candidate for them next year. And I just don't feel good enough about other guys to say that. So, yeah, I'm going to say Dylan Gabriel is probably my Heisman pick right now. He also is my number two quarterback right now. Only player on this list who's a transfer. You know, but neither of us had Cam Ward on the list, who I think is still way too boom or bust for me to put in my top 10, the new Miami quarterback. But, yeah, Dylan Gabriel for me is the only transfer and the only transfer for you as well. On the list, 91.7 PFF grade this past year, only behind Jaden Daniels and Bo Nix among FBS quarterbacks. by far the most experienced signal caller we're talking about. He has 1,855 career dropbacks. The next closest for me that was in my top 10 was Jackson Dart, who had 800 fewer than Dylan Gabriel, which is like basically like three seasons worth almost, basically. So it's insane how much experience Dylan Gabriel has. And with that experience, man, has the wisdom to keep the ball out of harm's way at a 2% turnover-worthy play rate at Oklahoma during his 2 years there, third among returning quarterbacks in college football. He also is a lot better in the pocket than he is outside of the pocket. He had a 52.4 passer grade when he was forced to leave the pocket. And also, like you said, it remains to be seen how he looks outside of Jeff Lebby's offense, who's now at Mississippi State, and also like Josh Heupel's offense as well. But in Will Stein's offense at Oregon, I think he's going to fit like a glove, man. He, like I said, heavily on play action. Really just asked Bo Nix to be a efficient game manager, and that's exactly what Dylan Gabriel does at a very, very high level. So that's why I think Dylan Gabriel is going to be a perfect fit for Oregon, why I think Oregon's a legit national title contender, and why I think right now Dylan Gabriel might be my pick to win the Heisman Trophy next year, is just because I think he fits so well at Oregon, and also he's one of the best quarterbacks in college football, as obvious as evidenced by him being number two on both of our lists. But pretty obvious number one, Dalton, for both of us. Who is the number one quarterback in college football heading into next year?
Number one, and I think the entire theme here in the top five was guys who I could make the safest projection on. Just like the easiest to go, look, that guy's going to be pretty darn good this year. It's Carson Beck from Georgia, and I don't think anybody's got a cleaner profile than Beck. I mean, you talk about fifth, and we didn't expect any of this last year, right? Stetson Bennett had just won two titles, and he left, and what is Carson Beck? And you go fifth in passing grade, fourth in clean passing grade, top eight against the blitz and no blitz, top 10 in play action, no play action. Everything across the board was just so solid. And you talk about, we talked during the season about what makes Beck so good. He's such a quick decision maker, man.
Yeah.
2.39 second time average time to throw last year, fastest by any quarterback with at least 250 pass attempts. There's going to be questions on Beck eventually, like athletically, and he's not that mobile, but you talk about a big time processor from the pocket in the intermediate game and the play action, basically just can do everything that they ask him to do at Georgia. It felt like at times last year, he just didn't screw anything up ever. It felt like Carson Beck never screwed anything up. And the only game where he even kind of struggled was the Alabama game in the SEC championship. Yeah. So, and Alabama's, again, best secondary in the country, and Brock Bowers is playing hurt. And again, I've said this before, the thing that sold me on Beck were those games that Brock Bowers were out, and even late in the year when he was playing, obviously still not 100%. And Beck got even better, man.
Yeah.
I mean, how much better can you get than he was against Kentucky and I believe against Tennessee without Bowers? You couldn't be any better than that. He'll tear you to shreds from the pocket. Georgia's going to be really good like they always are. And it just feels like there are no variables. I think the only variable with Beck, like a couple of these other guys, is, you know, maybe prime time. What's the ceiling? There's not a ton of improv to his game. He'll take off and run maybe once or twice a game, but it's not the prettiest thing you've ever seen. But he's just like, right now, he's the quintessential pocket quarterback in college football. And it's hard. It would be hard more than anybody else on this list. I could find a reason for almost anybody else on this list to struggle this year. Gabriel's the next closest, obviously. It's why he's number two. If nothing else, okay, you go, he's a transfer, a new environment. It's hard to find any reason at all that Carson Beck could struggle this year.
Yeah. No, I'm with you, man. He's my number one as well. It's pretty obvious. I knew making this list, like, all right, I know Beck's my number one. And after that, it's just figuring out the order for the rest of it. But, yeah, I mean, I wrote it, man. I think it's really rare for a program to lose a two-time national championship-winning quarterback and actually improve at quarterback. That's exactly what Georgia did by going from Stetson Bennett to Carson Beck. And obviously, he didn't win a ring this past year, and he's going to try to do it this upcoming year, as maybe Georgia might be the first or at least second-best team in college football heading into next year. He still was the fourth most valuable quarterback in the nation, according to our wins above average metric this past season. And the only three above him were all Heisman finalists, who all were top 15 picks in the NFL draft, in Bo Nix, Michael Penix Jr., and Jaden Daniels. He had a 91.5 overall PFF grade, 90.8 PFF passing grade, also fourth in the nation. You mentioned it, He's supremely accurate, precise timing. He had an 80.6% adjusted completion rate this past year, which if you don't know, adjusted completion rate is basically your completion percentage plus any drops that your receivers have as well. So 80.6%, that was third in the country. 2.39-second average time to throw was the fifth fastest in the country as well, among guys with 150 dropbacks. Again, doesn't add much on the ground. He had about 100 rushing yards this past year. He's average under pressure, but as a pure passer in college football right now, there's no one better than Carson Beck. And right now, I know it's not an NFL draft list either, but he'd also be QB1, like, for both of us in the 2025 NFL draft as well. Again, it's not a loaded quarterback class in college football right now, Dalton, but some intriguing guys that that we should keep an eye on. Now, I wanted to ask you before we leave, is there anyone who's like a new starter this year or anyone that like you just haven't seen enough from yet, but you were considering and you think could join the list? Like a guy like Connor Wegman for me from Texas A&M could be a guy that could have made an argument for this. Nico Iamaleava from Tennessee, I think, could have a huge year at Tennessee this year. Again, he hasn't started yet, so I don't want to put him in the top 10. Is there anyone like that that you think could be on this list next year? Just hasn't really seen – we haven't seen enough from them yet, honestly.
A guy that I really wanted to consider for number 10, but I just don't actually know if he's going to start, is Chandler Rogers, the transfer from North Texas to Cal.
Yeah.
I know Cal likes Fernando Mendoza a lot. He did some okay work for them at the end of last year, but I'm not sure where that competition stands. I really, really like Chandler Rogers' fit at Cal. There was a handful of other guys. Iamaleava, that's one for Tennessee where it's like you just always put up numbers in that offense, man. Yeah. The stats just always pop off in Heupel's offense. That he was another one where I was like, if I was going to go with a young kid, that might be it, just because that offense is so quarterback friendly, right? We've seen it with Hendon Hooker. Joe Milton still put up good numbers and got himself drafted, even though he had some accuracy issues. It's the same reason that I love Byron Brown from USF. They run that same exact offense. So it's a numbers kind of offense. Wegman, I'll be honest with you, I'm not yet sold on Wegman. Mm-hmm. I get he played well in four games last year, but it's also four games. And I know he was good against Miami, had a couple of gimmies against New Mexico, and I can't remember the other group of five team they played. I'm not totally sold on Wegman. Definitely those other – Chandler Rogers was one I really – if I knew he was starting at Cal, he would have been – he was actually in consideration even for number 10 on this list. I like him a lot, and I think he's going to start for Cal at some point this year. I just don't know – when that's going to be and how that's all going to fit. And now they're in the ACC and where, if they play Mendoza and they start 1-3 or something happens, what's going to happen there? That's one that I was looking at that. I just don't know if he's starting. So it's hard to put a guy on a list if I don't know if the team is actually going to play the best quarterback on their team.
Yeah. Yeah. The Cam Rising, obviously we've known a lot about Cam Rising, but he's coming back. Mm-hmm. That's another one that I think Caden Salter hurt to not put on the list either. He had a great year last year, but just the level of competition, it was just hard for me to put him in the top 10. Jalen Daniels as well. Another young kid who I'm really high on is Jackson Arnold from Oklahoma. I think that guy's going to have a good year at Oklahoma next year. So I'm excited to see what he can do. Just again, he didn't do much besides just him and Nico only played the bowl game. So it's like, all right, I can't put a guy who only played a bowl game. But both those guys were five-star recruits. Both those guys were in great environments, I think, at Oklahoma and Tennessee. I'm really excited to see what they could do for their teams next year. Malachi Nelson at Boise State could be a fun one.
I'll tell you another guy that I don't think either one of us even thought about, and a lot of other people I'm sure would, is if we had not mentioned Riley Leonard one time on this show.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a lot of people that I'm sure they're going to – well, he's at Notre Dame now, but I have issues with Leonard's accuracy. But you know that'll be a name on other lists, other top 10 lists, if people do this same sort of thing, that Riley Leonard's probably going to make some of them. So that'll be the big name to watch, obviously, being at Notre Dame now. But he's another one that I'm sure some people have floating around this feeling like, oh, he'll be a lot better at Notre Dame than he was at Duke.
Yeah, Will Howard is high in Heisman odds. I think he's fine.
Will Howard was one I thought about for like that 9-10 spot where it's projection big time. It is, but we just have to see it. Yeah. We have to see it consistently.
I was going to ask you guys about that. With the Ohio State quarterback room, a lot of people are very high on the isn't it Aaron Nolan is his name?
Aaron Nolan is there. Julian Sain is the other five-star quarterback there.
Yeah, their quarterback room, I mean, if you're ranking off quarterback room, do they have the best quarterback room in college football?
That or Texas. Probably with Texas. Arch.
Or, you got Oregon, too.
Or Oregon.
Dante
oh, yeah.
Moore,
I forgot they got the UCLA guy.
Dante's just young as hell, man. He's really young. He's got an absolute hose. I could see a year of sitting behind Gabriel being really good for Dante Moore, too. I
think, we'll do another episode next week, best quarterback rooms in 2024.
We could, honestly, if we have time this offseason, I think those could be position unit rankings could be really fun.
You know a guy who was quietly harder to leave off this list for me than it should have been, just because of the coach he plays for and what we saw in one game, is Miller Moss.
Yeah.
That's it's projecting, it's one game, but it's look, Lincoln Riley quarterbacks always end up in the top 10 somehow, right?
Yeah, that's true.
That's one. Maybe Miller Moss is the young kid that hasn't played yet with the right coach that I go, he's just going to put up stupid numbers because that's what Lincoln always does.
He's never had a quarterback who stunk before. I'm thinking about right now. Since he's been a head coach, he had Baker Mayfield, obviously Heisman winner, number one overall pick. Kyler Murray, Heisman winner, number one overall pick. Jalen Hurts, Heisman runner-up, starter in the NFL now. Rattler for a year. Who had a great year for 1 year and they got benched, and then now he's in the NFL. Caleb Williams, obviously Heisman winner, number one overall pick, and then now you got Miller Moss.
Sadly, not a five-star, though.
Yeah, not a five-star Miller Moss. Yeah, true.
Four-star.
True. But Jalen Hurts is a four-star.
Only a four-star.
Jalen Hurts is a four-star. Baker Mayfield's like a low three-star.
If it's not a five-star, Max doesn't want it.
I don't
want it.
Baker Mayfield was a walk-on.
Yeah, Baker Mayfield, was a walk-on. Malachi Nelson was there at USC. I thought he might win the job, but he's at Boise State now. It's another guy to keep an eye on, too. But DJ Uiagalelei, Jalen Daniels, Grayson McCall, KJ Jefferson, Cam Ward. I think a lot of people are going to be pissed that we don't have Cam Ward on this list. But just boom or bust, dude. If we're doing a top 10 NFL draft list, he'll probably be on it because of how ridiculous his talent is. But
he's got it late in the play, man. He's got to be safer with the football. You just cannot put the ball in danger late in the play. Like, it's this thing of he's an excellent athlete, but he's got to be safer with the ball. I cannot. And I'm also just not high on that Miami team in general. Look, Restrepo might put up great numbers, but I got a lot of questions about the rest of their team.
Cameron Ward, 42 turnover-worthy plays over the last 2 years that leads the Power 5. So
can't have it.
Yeah, boom or bust, dude. Really boom or bust player. But, yeah, that's what we got for our top 10 quarterbacks in college football heading into the 2024 season. We're going to try to do this for every single position in college football as well. So keep an eye on that. Make sure you subscribe to the channel. We're doing a lot more college football-centric episodes now, which is really fun to get back to it. But, yeah, so we got for our top 10 quarterbacks list. So for Dalton Wassman, for Rooster Eli back there, I'm Max Chadwick, and we will see you guys next time.